Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners. My name is John Scapini, and I'm with the United States Sentencing Commission. You're listening to a special mini-series on guideline amendments effective on November 1st, 2024, and appear in the 2024 Guidelines Manual. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Ross Thomas cover the amendment relating to miscellaneous and technical amendments. Other policy areas in this series include acquitted conduct, loss calculations, circuit conflicts, and youthful individuals. You can listen to all of the episodes in this series on iTunes and Spotify or on our website. Without further ado, here's Lori and Ross.
All right, Ross, we are on to our last item regarding the amendments taking effect November 1st of 2024, and we're going to call this our catch-all, right? This is our kind of miscellaneous segment. We have a few other things to wrap up regarding the amendments. What are we going to talk about in this session?
So this really can be divided up into two main topics. We're going to talk about changes that are coming to 2D1.1. That's our primary drug trafficking guideline. And there are some changes that relate to 4C1.1, which is the new adjustment for individuals that have no criminal history points and have no prior exclusions.
All right, let's start with drugs. 2D1.1, what do we have?
So the changes have to do with how we calculate the base offense level. And Lori, as you know, right, there are several different ways we can calculate the base offense level, but they kind of shake out into two kind of buckets. The first bucket is people being sentenced on the basis of death or serious bodily injury resulting from a drug trafficking offense, or they can be sentenced based on the drug type and quantity that's being trafficked in their offense. Now, the vast majority of people, it's about 99%, have their base offense level calculated using drug type and drug quantity. But for about 1% of other individuals being sentenced, they're sentenced based on this death resulting or serious bodily injury resulting. But it's quite a big hit in the terms of base offense levels world. So even though it doesn't affect a whole big chunk of the pie, it's really important to get this right.
It is. And we get helpline questions on this topic all the time for the reasons that you're going to talk about, the difference between when you apply those base offense levels for death and serious bodily injury and when you don't.
Oh, yeah. We probably get this question at least once a week, being like, I've got this case. Do I get to apply a base offense level of 43 or 38, or am I doing something totally else?
So tell us about that confusion. Why do people struggle with this?
So the confusion boils down to generally when we're calculating, right, offense levels, we use relevant conduct. And I know we talked about relevant conduct before, but there are some kind of exceptions or tweaks to relevant conduct where we're not considering sort of all this real offense conduct. We're really just looking at sort of the elements or the count of conviction, and that's very limiting. So the question here is, are we operating in this limited world where we're only looking at the count of conviction, or do we get to consider kind of more broadly what happened, even if it's not something like an element of the offense?
So why did this become an item for the commission to consider in terms of an amendment?
So I think it originally came to us from the federal public defenders during the comment period. They had noticed that there was some disparity into how this was being applied throughout the country. So they raised it with the commissioners, and the commissioners decided to take it up.
Well, there's that word disparity again, and I think that also explains why we get so many helpline calls on this topic, because it is being applied on a different standard by different people around the country. So how is it intended to apply? How are those increased base offense levels meant to apply?
They are meant to apply on the basis of the offense of conviction only.
And when you say offense of conviction, you mean what?
I mean, is it an element of the offense? I know that makes people very scared because it sounds like the categorical approach. It is not. We're just looking
at talk about that. No.
What is their statute of conviction? Does that statute of conviction contain, right, death or serious bodily injury, is that driving the statutory penalties? Is a prior serious drug offense driving those penalties? That's what we're looking at.
So in order for those increased penalties to apply, the person needs to have been charged with death or serious bodily injury right there in the count of conviction.
Bingo.
So this is not a relevant conduct analysis.
Nope, it is not a relevant conduct analysis. We're looking at statutory penalties. And the amendment language, and I think this is really clever, it is that we are examining, right, are the statutory penalties tracking a certain number of years? Is it a mandatory life term? If so, base offense level 43. Right. Is the mandatory minimum 20 years? Then it's going to be a base offense level of 38. I wouldn't worry about the A3 and A4 because they actually don't happen.
Right.
So we're really concerned with, right, is it going to be a 43, a 38, as driving it? And in order to figure that out, all you have to do is look at the statutory penalties now. It's plain and simple.
And just to try to clear this up a little bit more, the helpline call that we get on a regular basis is, hey, this defendant pled guilty to a regular drug distribution count, but the factual basis that was placed on the record at the plea, or the defendant admitted in the factual basis that they caused death or serious bodily injury to an individual. Can I use that information to use the higher base offense level? And the answer is no, because the count of conviction did not contain that death or serious bodily injury element. Am I tracking correctly?
You are, and I think it's really important to distinguish between a factual stipulation and a guideline stipulation under 1B1.2 or a stipulation explicitly to use this higher base offense level. One of the things that we heard through the amendment cycle, and both the kind of DOJ and the FPD agreed on this, they don't want the commission to take away their ability to negotiate fair resolution. So not have those statutory penalties apply, but agreeing on higher sort of base offense levels. And the parties are still totally free to do that. But they should be clear about what they're doing. They can either do a 1B1.2 stipulation and cite that language, or they can just agree to apply this higher base offense level as a matter of agreement without stipulating to this more serious offense occurring.
So if I'm summarizing what I'm hearing you say about this amendment is clarifying that those base offense levels, the increased base offense levels, can only apply when death or serious bodily injury is charged in the count of conviction or contained in a stipulation under 1B1.2.
Yes, or I think there's
I missed one.
I think there's a third or, and they don't actually have to do the formal process of 1B1.2. The parties can just agree to apply those higher base offense levels. And I think the thinking here is there are a lot of contentious factual issues about death resulting or serious bodily injury resulting, and the parties don't have to stipulate to those facts. They can sort of obviate the need to do so by just saying, we agree to apply base offense level 43, period,
okay.
End of the sentence. But all of this, again, to your original point, is distinct from a factual stipulation, a stipulation under Chapter 6, where they stipulate two facts. What they're doing is stipulating to higher guidelines. So they've got to either use 1B1.2 or use this new amendment language that says we just stipulate to this applying as the guidelines range.
Gotcha. And hopefully this will again eliminate some disparity in how the guidelines are being applied around the country and make this a little more clear for practitioners who are trying to figure this out.
That is always the goal.
Always the goal. All right, so now we've got 4C1.1, which was a new guideline that took effect in November of 2023 pertaining to individuals who have zero criminal history points. So what amendment is taking effect this year to clarify some issues with that guideline?
Yeah, so there are really kind of three big changes that are happening. So as you said, right? An individual can get a two-level reduction if they have no criminal history points and they satisfy 9 exclusionary factors. So if they sort of prove this thing didn't happen in their case or they didn't do it, like death or serious bodily injury, as we were just talking about, use of a firearm, substantial financial hardship, there are a bunch of them. So one of those factors is that the person did not or was not convicted of a sex offense against a minor. So the change with relation to that is to also exclude anyone who is convicted of a sex offense, whether that sex offense was perpetrated against a minor or perpetrated against an adult. Those crimes are deemed so serious that an individual, despite having no criminal history, would not get that two-level reduction.
Okay, so a change in the definition of sex offense, change number one.
Yep, and that is a substantive change. So, right, moving forward, if a person committed an offense against, a sex offense against an adult, they would be excluded from this reduction.
Okay, what's the second change?
The second change is clarifying change. So one of the exclusionary factors, which was written as a single factor, was that the defendant did not receive an aggravating role adjustment and was not a part of a continuing criminal enterprise. There we heard on Helpline and elsewhere that there was some confusion whether or not a person need to both be or play or have an aggravating role finding and be part of a continuing criminal enterprise or a CCE, or just was one or the other disqualifying. And what this amendment language does is clarify that what the commission said or intended was that if you have an aggravating role or you were a part of a criminal continuing criminal enterprise, either one of these things would be disqualifying.
We seem to have a lot of discussion about whether and means and means or, and this was another one that created a lot of confusion.
We did. I never thought I would be spending my days talking about and or all the time.
So I think the commission made this one very clear by now splitting it into two completely separate sections, right? So there won't be any discrepancy now in trying to interpret that language.
Yes, so that's exactly right. It's split into two prongs. Hopefully, if it wasn't clear before, personally, I thought it was kind of clear, but, you know, I don't make those decisions. We are splitting it up into two. So crystal clear, either one of those things is disqualifying.
Great. And there's a third item relating to 4C1.1, right?
There is. The change actually deals with 1B1.1, right, our general application instructions and the order of operations. There was some confusion or people weren't entirely clear whether they should apply acceptance of responsibility, right, those reductions in 3E1.1 before or after, right, the reduction for a certain zero-point offender. And this could make a big difference because you or an individual can, upon a government's motion, get a third level for saving them resources from going to trial, etc. If their offense level is 16 or greater. So when you apply this two-level reduction, could impact whether someone gets that third point.
Right.
And what this clarifies in the general application instructions is that we apply acceptance of responsibility, 3E1.1, before we hit Chapter 4. We're applying the book in order.
Yep.
And pretty simple, straightforward.
And that was another pretty frequent helpline call after the 2023 amendments took effect. I would say these last two items you talked about, we got calls on pretty frequently. The aggravating role in CCE and the order of operations question. So I think it's really helpful that the commission is straightening this out for people that were struggling with those issues.
Yeah, before we got to too much disparity in people being sentenced differently across the country.
All right, so that wraps up our last segment. We thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next topic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. You can listen to each part of this mini-series on iTunes and Spotify, as well as our website. Please be advised that the information provided by Commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the Commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the Commission, court, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.